Good morning. So Reverend Crystal often talks about spiritual evolution. And can you hear me okay? Okay. And when Reverend Jim was here, he spoke about Elijah and Elisha, the teacher and the student, or about two phases of one person or humanity's spiritual evolution. And he talked about how evolving spiritually is about listening to our higher self, our divine self, our more courageous self, rather than listening to the smaller ego self. And he said that the way to distinguish between those two voices, because sometimes we're really not quite sure, the way to distinguish is to, when we're hearing the voice of our divine self, we can feel it in our gut. It's a voice of love, an expansive voice. And this is about discernment. So evolving spiritually is about listening to spirit and discovering, you know, which is spirit speaking through us and which is our own, perhaps less courageous voice speaking. So the Sakyong Mipham, who is a Buddhist teacher in the Shambhala tradition, talks a little bit about this, and I want to read a quote that he says. Is that okay? All right. Okay. He says, "I meet many people, and I can tell just by how they look or speak that they are hampered by drip, a Tibetan word that describes contamination of ourselves and the environment, the depletion that comes from living on the me plan. Drip is the opposite of wind horse. Wind horse thrives on discernment and intelligence. Drip thrives on lack of it. It is the element that exudes when we engage in aggression and fixation. We think we have to push to get to where we want to go. When our mind is habitually agitated and discursive, drip becomes a veil of normality. We believe it doesn't matter what we say, think, or do, or eat. Living our life in a nonchalant way, we miss so many opportunities. We forget about wisdom and compassion. We forget that every moment of our life is important." So he sets up this dichotomy, and drip gets associated with dirty fuel, but also with a lack of attention to our dress, to what we're eating, to our level of presence, and to our habituation to addictive behaviors, zoning off on, the internet, but also to a lack of attention to nature. So wind horse, on the other hand, is about coming into presence, being present for our lives. It's about discernment and courage. So how do we, as people of faith, come into spiritual evolution? So on the night of the Buddha's enlightenment, we are told that Siddhartha meditated under a Bodhi tree. He goes to nature, and he sits in nature. And all through the night, as the story goes, Mara, the tempter, comes to him and hurls temptation after temptation at him. And does anyone know the story and remember what the final greatest temptation was that Mara brought? Anyone? So the last temptation, the greatest one, is self-doubt. And as the story goes, Siddhartha, as he's becoming the enlightened one, invites Mara to tea. So he's not closing out the things that he's afraid of, the things that seem threatening. Rather, he takes Mara in and invites him to tea. But the story goes that just before that moment, he does something that's really significant. He reaches down and he touches the earth. He touches the soil to give him balance and a sense of courage and hope and wisdom. And we are also told in the Bible that Jesus, also goes to nature. He goes to the Garden of Gethsemane to pray and to meditate on the night before his final temptations, or the night before his final act of courage. And throughout the night, Satan tempts him. And as it comes towards morning, he gathers the courage to go into that final act of courage. So the Bible and all the wisdom traditions are filled with images, metaphors, parables, and stories of the earth. And we get stories about locusts and floods, and we get parables of tiny mustard seeds becoming huge, vibrant plants. And we also get stories of place. So we have Jesus preaching on the mount, Jesus going to the shore to bring in fishermen and make them disciples. And metaphysically, as the Fillmores say, these have to do with states of mind, spiritual evolution. But they also have to do with physicality. They have to do with earth as our home, our shelter, our beautiful surroundings. So we are told earth and nature is divine. It is all. It is us, and we are earth, dust to dust. So Windhorse is about coming to see and act from our divine goodness, using our power and our gifts to honor and protect nature, allowing earth to evolve in a natural way rather than in an unnatural way, according to drip, according to our smaller ego selves who deal in a more extractive mentality. Carolyn Merchant, a feminist geographer, talks in her book called The Death of Nature about the progression through time from a time when humanity tended to see nature as alive and imbued with spirit and something to be honored and worshipped, through the scientific and industrial revolutions, to a place where we came to see Earth as dead and inert and something that to be extracted, something to own. All right. And mountaineer and journalist Dar Jamel, in his book The End of Ice, talks about this way of seeing Earth as this more so-called evolved way of seeing Earth. And he talks about it in terms of, he calls it the sickness of exploitation or cannibalism, where we're consuming another's life for our own. Or in the Native American terms, it's called Watiko. All right. Oh, whoops. And some examples, the annihilation of the buffalo in one generation, the genocide of Native Americans, and the extracting of millions of Africans from their homeland and their families and their culture, extracting them and treating them as things to own. Greta Thunberg also talks about this kind of exploitation or cannibalism in terms of an intergenerational exploitation, that younger generations are feeling the exploitation of being left with an earth that is much diminished. So how do we generate Windhorse? How do we start to see Earth as imbued with spirit and alive? Particularly when we live in a culture where messages bombard us to consume more, to multitask more, to go for more convenience, where we're given a plastic bag for a card and a gallon of milk, and where we move along with business as usual. And where we go around pretending that we're not collectively sitting squarely in the middle of the impasse of all impasses. So how do we stop this denial and wake up to the fact that currently our planet is in a state of dire crisis? How do we confront a time where forest fires are swallowing California and many parts of the world, where much of the global south is destined to become uninhabitable due to extreme drought and heat, where crop yields are going down because of climate crisis, and where sea level is swallowing up island nations and entire countries such as Bangladesh. And this is an environmental justice issue, an issue of environmental racism, because we know that those who are the most impacted by these changes are people in the global south, and also people, Native American people, people of color, poor people who are living in our inner cities and more subjected to environmental damage. Okay, so the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, announced a few months ago that we have a window of 10 years in which to turn things around. Others say that Dar Jamal, for one, says this document is politicized and that really the feedback loops have already started to go into motion. So environmentalists are constantly debating the issue of framing. And there's a lot of fear in environmental communities worrying that if we don't pay attention to framing, we could really lose this battle. Because what tends to happen is that when we start thinking about things that are very much scare-inducing, oftentimes we go into denial and we shut out the truth. And they say we really need to focus on positive messaging. And in a climate where messaging is huge, as we know, I want to keep this question open and switch gears a little bit and go into a little bit of storytelling about my own story. Okay. So this is a story that happened several years ago. I was at my former church in the conference room waiting for a class to start. And for once in my life, I was early. And so I reached in my book bag and took out the book that I was reading, which was this book, The Sixth Extinction. And my senior pastor at the time said, "Oh, what are you reading?" And I said, "Well, this is The Sixth Extinction, and it's about the fact that we currently live in the sixth great extinction, the last being the period where all dinosaurs perished when a meteorite hit the Earth, all dinosaurs larger than a domestic cat, so this huge cataclysm." And she said, her response was kind of like this, "Oh, I can't go there." And I was talking about this issue with a friend recently, and she did a similar response, kind of like, "I work so hard to be positive and happy, I can't go there." And I was thinking about it, because I remembered, as she said that, not too many years ago, a friend asking me, "Are you going to read Bill McKibben, who's a big environmentalist, are you going to read his then latest book called Earth, which is about how the Earth we currently inhabit is a different Earth than most of us grew up with because of climate crisis?" And my reaction was, I cannot go there. I am in the middle of major crisis here. I can't go there. And so I want to talk a little bit about what brought me to this place and what brought me out of this place. So I had been teaching environmental justice courses at UAlbany for several years, looking at the inequitable environmental policies that we tend to adopt in our country. This is Warren County, North Carolina in 1982, which is seen as the beginning of the environmental justice movement. And I had really been wrapped up in thinking about these issues. I was coming up on my tenure case. I thought things looked really good. I had published my book and my 5 peer-reviewed articles, feeling pretty good. And then crisis hit. One of my colleagues accused me of plagiarism in my book, and that sent everything into a huge tailspin, 5 years of just devastation. I ended up being cleared of the charges, but losing my tenure battle. And it was during this time that I was just so lost and just filled with so much pain, as we say in Buddhist circles, cocooning, you know, lost in this little cocoon where you're surrounded by your own filth and just not letting the light and the air in. And in my case, the mental anguish turned into physical anguish. I ended up having to have back surgery. My doctor said I couldn't run, or cross-country ski, which are my mental health salvations. So I was moving along in this complete cocoon phase and saying, you know, I just cannot read that book. And then my doctor said, well, you know, if it's really your thing, you can go out, but just don't go far or fast. So I went out for a cross-country ski. I took a podcast of Tara Brach, a Buddhist teacher who I love. And this was the real turning point for me, and I think it's really an important point. Tara talked about how the Buddhist path, and I think it holds for all wisdom traditions, the way that we can really face pain and crisis is not by running away, turning away. And she articulated, according to the Buddhist path, that life is suffering, that suffering is caused by our attachment and our desire, and that we can find freedom from suffering by coming into presence and by opening our hearts to that suffering and that pain, and feeling our hearts raw and opened and not turning away. And so in the case of environmental degradation, rather than putting up a barrier of self-protection that's constructed of our just habitual responses, going into these trances of eating, drinking, planning, rushing, going off on social media, we can really come into presence and not turn away. And we can really allow the grief to puncture our hearts. And so this really, this wasn't something that was new to me, but it came as such a revelation at this point, because I was so attuned to pulling away from the pain and getting distracted. And so I think that the response, rather than denying eco-anxiety, is to really open to the pain and become a silent witness to what's happening to our polar bears, and open to the fact that scientists say that amphibians are going extinct at a rate 45,000 times the background extinction rate that we would expect. They're the most vulnerable to climate change. And I think it's also important, as we become silent witnesses to what's happening, to realize that for now, we are alive, and our planet still can be saved to a certain extent. And to set our intention to join with others in collective goodwill, and to celebrate that we do indeed tread on sacred ground. And we can set our intention to stop focusing on cocooning stories, and we can know that this can be part of our healing. So I believe that this impasse we now inhabit is a spiritual and a moral crisis. And the reds and the oranges here are showing areas that are expected to have lower crop yields due to climate change. And so, as you can see, this is an environmental justice issue. So as long as we continue on with business as usual without putting environmental awareness and action at the very center of every decision, we need to ask ourselves why we're going into avoidance. And so I want to talk a little bit about what that means to me. I think in one way, putting environmental awareness at the center of our being is to educate ourselves. And that might mean looking at David Wallace Wells' book, The Uninhabitable Earth. There's also a great review of it in the New York Times Review of Books. Or perhaps watching Nash and Hogan's award-winning film called Climate Refugees. Or it may mean voting, writing letters to other constituents or to our leaders, our legislators, going to legislative hearings, weighing in on pending legislation. It may mean going to rallies or even participating in civil disobedience. Or it may mean writing blogs, educating our children. I think it means discerning, you know, what our gifts are and doing whatever we feel that we can do. And for me, it meant buying a used electric vehicle, very cheap and comes with a lot of inconvenience, I must say, getting solar panels, making sure to always compost, not throw away organic material since it causes methane, a huge driver of climate change, eating food that's going bad first so that we're not wasting food, which is another huge driver of climate crisis. And it may mean bringing up these issues amongst our friends and having the courage to risk appearing weird, as I know I oftentimes do. And for me, after that run where I listened to Tara Brach's podcast, it meant going home and brushing off Bill McKibben's book and starting to research again environmental practices and policies. And this brought me to discover that 60% of our greenhouse gases globally come from the meat and dairy industry. So it brought me from a practice of having been a vegetarian for many years to moving as much as possible towards a plant-based diet. So, we have a commercial break.
Do you find yourself longing for the apocalypse? I did. I was looking for a reason to live. Hi. Are you feeling tired, irritable, stressed out? Well, you might consider Nature.
From the people that brought you Getting Outside comes prescription-strength Nature, a non-harmful medication shown to relieve the crippling symptoms of modern life.
Nature's recommended for humans of all ages, and it's great for pets, too.
Nature can reduce cynicism, meaninglessness, anal retentiveness, and murderous rage. In clinical studies, Nature is proven to decrease work-induced catatonia.
Caution. Nature may cause you to slow down, quit your job, or seriously consider what the f*** you're doing with your life.
If you are overly cynical, jaded, or emotionally numb, you may need to increase your dose of Nature. Do you have trouble being even mildly uncomfortable? Nature may not be right for you. Side effects may include spontaneous euphoria, taking yourself less seriously, and being in a good mood for no apparent reason.
So ask your doctor if Nature is right for you.
I'm glad you appreciated that as much as I do. So going into nature, going into the silence, going deep within, going through the portals and accessing Windhorse. These are the portals to freeing ourselves from Watiko, from Jurep, and from our less evolved selves. And these remind us that everything on this beautiful earth is connected intimately, and to allow one species, one region, or one people to slip into extinction is to allow disease and chaos to spread. So we can wake up and start loving and caring for all species and all people of this earth.
So during the next few weeks, Unity's Earth Care team will be showing films, panels, having workshops. Next week, we'll be showing this film, The Need to Grow, which is a very positive film. And we've been, Mark Creighton has been working on bringing us to solar energy. We've set up a compost bin. So right after church, we will have a little teach-in about composting, if anybody cares to listen to that. And we are looking into possibly moving towards non-disposable plates and cutlery and towels. And some of us have marched, and this was the September 20th student march for the climate. And so there's a sign-up sheet out in the hallway if you'd like to join our team. And we're going to be continuing our efforts as time goes on. So I'd like for us now to read together. Oh, also, we're going to be moving on to this film and discussion, The Pachamama and Drawdown, in a few weeks. So if we could read together the Unity Covenant, and Mark or anyone else who's part of the Earth Care team, if you would come up with me. All right. And I believe you all have copies of it in your bulletin. So we'll read together. We, as a sacred community, envision a human society that acknowledges and respects the intrinsic value of all beings. We strive to live in an ecologically responsible and sustainable way in harmony with nature. We live in gratitude and appreciation while working to bring this awareness to others. We realize our place in the interdependent web of life on this planet and affirm our reverence for all aspects of God's creation, known and unknown to us. Let us join together as we mindfully support being and protection of planet Earth's diverse ecosystem. We agree to transform our individual and congregational lives into acts of moral witness, to live with ever-increasing awareness and mindfulness of how our actions impact the balance of nature, and to work with determination and grace to bring climate justice. We dedicate ourselves to all in our power to live in a way that allows planet Earth's innate resilience to restore and maintain physical conditions and huge diversity of life forms that, through interactions, support human existence. We declare our covenant with Spirit to walk lightly upon this beautiful earth as we hold this vision for the greatest good of all creation. Thank you. And now I invite the musicians to join us. Thank you.